to Get Real KC with Jen and Eric. Kansas City's consumer-facing real estate podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Get Real KC, where we are overflowing with a passion for all things real estate. I'm Eric Jurgensen.
And I'm Jen Justice.
And today we're bringing to you a very timely podcast. Now, our podcast really is designed to be a library of information that stands the test of time. But today's podcast is very specific in time because it's April 1st. 2024.
And this is not a joke.
That's right. This is
not
no joke.
April Fools.
It is not April Fools. There's been a lot of real estate information in the news about a settlement that the National Association of Realtors proposed with a lawsuit that was around last year. And we really want to give out some real information because, unfortunately, there is a ton of incorrect information.
Yeah, I saw a headline yesterday, how this is going to be bad for women in real estate. Everybody's grabbing a headline, and unless you live under a rock, which I get some people do, and I totally respect that because the news is not very pleasant sometimes, but unless you live under a rock, you've probably seen the news about commissions changing, things that are going like that. Just a lot of news media coverage that's not necessarily correct.
Right. It's pretty inaccurate, right? I've got a couple of words to describe it, right? Fake news, yellow journalism, one word, right? Which I think you can't have in the first minute if we get this on YouTube, but bullshit. but let's start with having you guys understand that who we are and who we're speaking for, right? A little disclaimer here. Neither one of us are lawyers. This podcast shouldn't be represented as legal advice, shouldn't really be represented as specific advice to you unless you become a client of ours, and then we'll obviously have those. We're just trying to get out really good information, information as we understand it in the moment today. It's really important that, and we're not going to speculate on causes and other undercurrents we've been hearing about. We're not going to do any of that. We will do a little bit of speculation about what it could mean, some of the settlement agreement might mean for the industry.
Yeah, what do the results look like? And how does this affect you?
But we should also let you, well, and as we kind of get into all of this, we'll be very specific about what is specific, what is real, and then what is speculation on our part.
Yeah, and I said earlier, this is not final. So this has not been fully accepted yet on behalf of everyone. It is a proposed settlement, and some things are supposed to shake out still, and literally, as National Association of Realtors members, which Eric and I both are, and I truly believe we appreciate NAR. I know one of the things I keep hearing right now, Eric, is, well, I don't want to be a member anymore of NAR. I've heard that from a lot of different
overreaction.
People. I don't know how involved those realtors may or may not be, but for me personally, NAR provides a tremendous amount of value. It is an organization that I volunteer in, I believe wholeheartedly in. And without it, home ownership and property rights would not be where they are today. I think maybe a lot of realtors don't understand that. But NAR is the big entity here that's proposed a settlement. Some other brokerages already had settled previous to that. And then there is a last brokerage that is still in the fight.
Yeah.
So well, that's kind of where that part of that's at.
So let's get a framework. First of all, you've probably seen in the news, as a matter of fact, here just a couple of days ago, one of the local TV news stations here in Kansas City ran a story that said real estate commissions are going away in July or August. That was an actual live newscast here in one of our local stations. We've heard that housing prices are about to come down, that agents' commissions are about to come way down. That's a lot of speculation. The first two of those statements clearly aren't true. The National Association of Realtors will no longer enforce a 6% commission rate.
They never did, by the way.
Nobody ever enforced any commission rate. Yeah, well, let me put it this way.
Commissions have always been negotiable.
Yeah, certainly in my 5 years, it's the way I do it, the way we were taught, et cetera. So there's a lot of fake news out there. Let's talk about what really happened. And to start there, we have to start with the nature of the lawsuit that was judged upon last year. And so the lawsuit simply was an antitrust lawsuit that suggested that because of the common and in some places required practice of advertising on a multiple listing service, and that's the database that all the realtors use to share information about houses and to look up information about houses, that because the practice is that if a seller can and does frequently, if not most of the time, offer compensation to the competitors, to their competitor, the buyer's agent, and they publish that information through the MLS, is that prices were being inappropriately inflated, adjusted, and that sellers were being damaged because they were being forced to pay these fees. It's irrelevant of what my opinion of that is. That lawsuit won. There was judgments against a variety of the plaintiffs, including the National Association of Realtors. And the judgment that came down was $1.8 billion. And it's my understanding that in an antitrust suit, that's always tripled when the damages are actually done. So the NAR is looking at $5-6 billion in fines. And they, like any company that's litigated against, said, okay, what makes sense here?
And how much bond are we going to have to post to do an appeal is also a factor.
Right. And, you know, do we do an appeal that we may not win? Is settling the right choice, et cetera? They made the decision to settle, and that's what's in the news right now. So they negotiated with the other side, and they came up with a settlement. That settlement has not been approved by the judge. And even after it's approved by the judge, other interested parties could, in fact, raise objection, which then will have to be dealt with. I don't know the ins and outs of antitrust law. Like, we're not lawyers, but that's the way it's been explained to me. So any changes that are coming out of this, the earliest we're likely to see them is probably August. So let's talk about the elements of that settlement, right? So very specifically, and there's a couple of nuts and bolts we'll probably skip because they're just not worth it. But the big items are, before we talk about the settlement, let's talk about why sellers are encouraged to offer compensation to a buyer's agent. Let's talk about why that is, why that happened. So it really happened. Well, okay.
So I've been in this a little longer than Eric, and I'll just say that before we had buyer's agency and before we had agency in general, which was done to be more transparent to the public, to do a better job explaining who represents who, we had something called buyer beware. And buyer beware just basically meant that everyone was working for the seller. And this was a little bit ago, okay? So I've slept since this was a thing, but it tended to be that buyers would unknowingly step into big piles of dung because no one was helping them and everyone worked for the seller. And so, Mr. Buyer, you beware. I'm not going to tell you to have an inspection. I'm not going to guide you through this process. And if we pull the wool over your eyes, so be it, because everybody works for the seller. That's just how it is. So it was discovered that maybe that's not a very good practice, and maybe, we should be better to the consumers than that.
Maybe buyers should have their own representation.
And buyers should have their own representation. And I am skipping over some pieces because there's a lot more to this than I'm going to get into, but interagency.
Right.
And so we have a lot of different types of agency now. It does become very complicated. Realtors themselves sometimes don't indulge themselves in it. I've taught a little bit on it over the course of my tenure of a couple decades. So I've become intimately familiar with agency at different levels. So you can have a seller's agent, a buyer's agent. You can have a designated agent. There's lots of different types of sub-agents, a transaction agent, all kinds of agents. And this was developed to be more transparent to the consumers and to better serve the clients. And then put on top of that, that if you are only representing a seller, there could be some worries about fair housing.
Yeah.
You know, so we tried to clean that up as best we were. You know, we've gone through clear cooperation was also something that was designed to clean this up more.
Right.
So and now we're going to go backwards.
Well, let's break these both down a little bit. So that and I BREDA is the name of the act, and I can't come up with what the acronym actually means, but it was adopted in Kansas and Missouri, both in the 90s. So both Kansas and Missouri real estate commission rules, laws, et cetera, suggest define all of these agency relationships. And so now we have a buyer's agent. And if you aren't a longtime homeowner, or even if you are, you may not remember any of this stuff, or it probably wasn't explained to you very well. But the reality is that now we have the opportunity to provide buyer's agency to buyers. It's a really good thing. However, there are some challenges with buyer's agency. And one of the challenges is that a lot of buyers, especially in moderate to low income families, struggle to come up with the cash necessary to be able to buy a home, because even with reduced down payment percentages, there's down payments, there's closing costs. By the way, you're gonna move, right? You might have to buy a fridge or whatever. So there's all kinds of cash outlays to buy a home. Well, if you add to that the cash outlay for your representation, right, then it becomes even more harder, right? It becomes harder to obtain. And so one of the reasons why we would encourage a seller to offer compensation to the cooperating broker is to make it easier for certain people to make offers on their home, which is in their best interest, to have as many people interested in their home as possible, to be able to get the best price as possible. So we were doing that, A, as a fiduciary obligation to our sellers, but B, because we knew industry-wide it was going to be much better to offer that compensation so that buyers who have to come up with the most cash almost always, unless you're upside down in a mortgage or something, to do that. Now, that's why I think the primary reasons we offer cooperating compensation. The next question is, why is it on the MLS, right? And so this becomes essentially a fair practice issue. And
transparency,
which, as you know, we at Dream Properties Real Estate are just huge proponents of. But to understand this, you have to understand how brokerages get paid. The companies, the brokerages themselves get paid, or at least the traditional model of how brokerages get paid. And it typically works like this. There are some brokerages now that don't work exactly like this, but essentially, if I'm representing you and we've negotiated my commission, it could be a flat fee, it could be an hourly rate, could be a percentage, could be any of those things. You're not actually paying me directly. You actually pay my brokerage. And then my brokerage typically takes a percentage of that. So think about this for a moment. So you're in a brokerage and you have hundreds of agents in the city. And you get a listing, right? Or one of your agents gets a listing, and that's great. And when it's sold, they've offered half of that compensation to somebody who brings a ready, willing, and able buyer. Well, if you're a brokerage and you have a lot of people, it's probably in your financial best interest to go, hey, let's make sure that we don't have somebody else in our teams who's got a ready and willing and able buyer, because then I don't get just a percentage of my listing agent's money, but I get a percentage of the buying agent's money as well. Well, I get that that makes fiscal sense for a brokerage. However, it completely eliminates or just ignores your responsibility to your seller, whose best interest, because 95% of sellers want two things. They want the most money as fast as possible. And so for the vast majority of sellers, the fiduciary responsibility is to get it out to everyone, all right, and offer compensation to everyone so that they will bring their buyers. So you're really busting down your fiduciary responsibility if you're not doing that. So in an effort to create fair trade practices, in an effort to make sure that people aren't offering different compensation to different potential buyer's agents, and that's a massive nest of worms, the MLSs were saying, hey, you've got to publish this, essentially publish for one, publish for all. And that's why it was
pocket listings, clear cooperation.
Yeah, and that's why it was in the MLS. So these are the reasons, the primary reasons, as I understand it, that these things were around. Yet it was determined that they were an antitrust violation. So now we get to the NAR saying, hey, we're going to settle this. And the current state of the settlement has several items to it. One is a cash outlay. It's $418 million over 4 years. It's money, okay? The second is a release of liability. Essentially, and I don't know how this works, but there's been copycat lawsuits since this has come out, et cetera, et cetera. And for the vast majority of the members of the NAR, they'll have all of their liability released, essentially going, okay, if you guys settle, we're no longer going to sue you, and somehow the copycats don't apply and all of that. That's lawyer talk. I have no clue how it works, but good for them.
Or not, actually.
Yeah, yeah. The third is that the NAR and its membership do not admit any wrongdoing, right? I mean, you can clearly tell from the way we're describing it, we feel like it's actually best for the industry and not a bad thing. But here's the two functional pieces. And one is that signed agreements must be in place before you show a home. Now, oh my goodness. So when you start talking about, and we can only speak to really, I mean, we...
Our practices mainly in how we've done business.
And to what's going on.
I haven't worked for any franchises ever.
Yeah.
So I haven't... I've only been in the smaller entity. So some of the stuff that's been alleged against other companies, I have no personal experience with. It's all just hearsay to me, right? Like, and why this may have come about. So it's like, whoa. Like, I just have no idea because I've always been boutique. So.
And the other thing is that although we may be aware of some of the laws in other states, what we're familiar with are the laws in Kansas and Missouri. So in Kansas and Missouri, the law suggests that if you are acting as a buyer's agent, and there's some real particular lines you have to cross, but I will tell you that for the vast majority of agents in this area, when they're showing a home to a client or a potential client, because technically you're not a client until you've signed that agreement, you're acting as a buyer's agent. Because among other things, you're usually talking about and giving price advice, and that's the easy line to cross. The minute you start offering price advice, you are acting as a buyer's agent. And the practice has always been, so the rule's always been there, but not everybody follows it and gets that agreement signed. That's going to be a thing now, that agreements have to be signed before you show a single house. Now, there's a part of this, I love that. I think that buyers should be represented and they should know they're being represented. They should know exactly what the expectation is for payment for their representation, and all of that will be in that agreement. It's in the agreement today. And with my clients, I go through it. However, right? Hey, people who are going to be buyers, listen up. This is really, really, really important. If you're meeting your potential realtor, right, somebody who might represent you for the first time at a property, they're going to be required to get you to sign something. And that document may be an exclusive right to represent for a lengthy period of time. That means that they're going to go, hey, look, the law says I can't show you this house unless you sign this document. And that document might say, Eric and Dream Properties Real Estate are going to be your sole representative for the next 6 months. And then you're locked. So you need to be very, very, very careful about what you're signing. They do have the ability to have you sign a document that says they're your representative for that property only, and that they are not your sole representative in your search going in the future. They have that capability. It's not common. And I can tell you that I don't ask my clients to sign that. I tend to meet with my clients before a showing, and we agree that I'm the right representation for them, and I sign that other document with them. But they do it eyes wide open. You need to have your eyes wide open, because not everybody is going to be as particular about explaining the details of that agreement as maybe Jen and I would be.
Well, and part of that's time. Like, I really like to break bread, as they say, and get to know somebody, get to know what they're doing. The practicality of that is some people don't have time for that. We choose to make time to have coffee or do whatever as part of almost part of our policy. It's not specific policy that you have to have coffee before. Sorry if you don't drink coffee, but we like to really get to know and understand where we're meeting on this. And sometimes you do have to meet at the house. These documents are able to be done electronically. But in practicality, if we're really doing a good job explaining, we are meeting face to face, or having a Zoom for that matter, where we can, you know, really get together on this and understand what we're signing, understanding where these numbers are falling, understanding pre-approval, paying cash, all of these different pieces that come in, because there's so many pieces to this.
Yeah. And so this part of the settlement, assuming the settlement stands as is the part that nobody's talking about and that you need to be very aware of. That's number one. Number two, and this is the one that what everybody is talking about, is those offers of cooperative compensation. You're selling your home. You and your realtor have determined, well, you, most importantly, have determined it's a good idea to offer paying the compensation for somebody who brings you a ready, willing, and able buyer, and you've chosen how much that compensation is going to be. That compensation will no longer be allowed to be on the MLS or on any of the sites that pull data from the MLS. Now, there's a caveat for individual brokerage sites that use a particular kind of data feed, but it can't be on Zillow, it can't be on Realtor.com, it can't be on Trulia, it can't be on Redfin, and I'm sure I'm missing
some.
There's
100 other ones because, you know, the, what is it called, the downline? Or upstream.
Upstream.
I'm not IT guys, yeah. Rely on Eric for that, but so that data stream has become bigger and bigger and bigger, and more people have wanted to get their hands on that data, and more people have syndicated that data. And that is all great for our clients because that provides transparency. However, given the nature of this settlement, they are saying that as part of the agreement, as long as it's approved, that this would no longer be able to be published in those particular areas.
So the agreement does not suggest that the offers of cooperative compensation are illegal or should go away, and they're not likely to.
Well, the truth is that people need help with this. It's their biggest financial investment, typically. Some people have bigger retirements. Some people have bigger investments. I mean, there's always, you know, those exceptions. But as a rule, home ownership in America is a big piece of people's pie, and it's quite complicated. And on average, they're only doing it once every 8 years. So how good am I at something if I only do it once every 8 years? Might I want somebody that does it on a regular basis or has extensive experience? I mean, let alone our company has. I'm an investor. Eric's done a little bit of investing, and it's something that we personally walk through multiple times a year.
Oh, yeah.
So we have our feet in the mud, if you will, boots on the ground. And it's really complicated. And even in my own personal ones, for example, I just sold one of my investment properties, and it was one of the more complex transactions that I have dealt with in my life because of a variety of factors. And no two transactions are the same. And if you have only done this, by the way, 8 years ago, the regulations were completely different. Loans were different. Seller's disclosure probably looked different. I mean, there's a multitude of things. Planning and zoning things were different. I can't even begin to think of everything without looking at different lists that I have to explain to people the nature of this business and what all we have to look at, figure out, and try and make sure that we're asking the right questions and doing the right things. It's not just I unlock a door, show you a home, and wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, here we are. We sold a house today.
Yeah.
It's not that easy.
It's HGTV. It's not a 30-minute transaction.
Yeah. I mean, it's just
The need for representation clearly exists, and it's not going to be illegal for a seller to say, you know what, I'll be happy to pay part of the compensation or all of the compensation for somebody who brings a ready, willing, and able buyer. Here's the difference. So if you're working with me today, we've agreed on what my fee is going to be, all right? It's going to be X dollars or X percent, hourly rate, whatever it is. So let's say that we've determined it's X percent, whatever X is, you fill in a number. So today you say, hey, Eric, I want to go see this house. And then I can immediately look on the MLS and see what, if anything, they're offering for cooperation compensation. And so maybe it's X, maybe it's less than X, maybe it's zero. All of those are possible today, but I'll know before we even go see the house. And so what I'll do if it's less than X is I'll go to the client and I'll say, hey, just so you know, this particular house blanket is only offering, you know, a half of what we've agreed my fee will be. So theoretically, when we get to the closing table, you'll be responsible for the other half. Now, in today's world, just because somebody has said, I'm only going to offer half of X, doesn't mean that we can't write into the contract that they pay all of X, and then they can either accept it or not accept it or negotiate it, just like you can with your agent's commissions. So even if somebody says, hey, I'm offering, you know, one half of X, you can put that in a contract and say, hey, I really need you to pay all of X, but here's what I'm going to pay you for your house. That all can happen today. The difference is going to be is that after the settlement, again, assuming it doesn't change, I'm going to have to go hunting for that information, all right? We're going to have to figure out whether or not that's the consistent information that is being said to everyone. So when we go see a house, we may not know that. So we may not. We haven't figured out how all that information is going to be communicated. But it's going to change the process a little bit for me, which is fine. I don't mind that my process changes, but it might change the process for you. And I have a feeling that the compensation amounts are going to get negotiated a lot more often in the contracts. That's okay. That actually gives
it's
you...
It's always been allowed in the contract. That was just a myth that somebody made up once upon a time and said, oh, you can't put any... fees or marketing fees or professional compensation. You can't put that in the contract, which is just simply not true. As an investor, I've done that a lot, let me just tell you, especially when people come to me if I had a property that wasn't offered for sale. And, you know, especially in this aggressive seller's market that we've had, I've had buyer's agents, buyers, people in general approach me and say, you know, I want to buy that house that you have. I really want it. And they would write the compensation right in the contract. And I'm totally fine with that. The title company's totally fine with that. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. And by the way, that's the way commercial real estate works, period. Almost exclusively.
If they're going to offer any compensation or if they're willing to pay any compensation. I mean, you literally in commercial have had to go outside of it's pretty common practice to try and figure out that representation outside of the transaction itself way before you get to the property they buy. Yeah.
So let's talk about possible ramifications for you, buyers and sellers of homes. Number one is that if the seller is offering cooperative compensation, and sellers as well will have this problem, is that more of the, I'm going to call it math, right? As we start negotiating more and more of these things, the numbers will just get more complicated. So that's one potential change. Like I said, my process will change. Well, boohoo for me. That's no big deal. But trying to lay everything out so that you understand the numbers, the net results, et cetera, that'll be a little bit more complicated for you. Great agent's going to be able to walk you through that. So maybe that doesn't matter as much, just a little more complicated. The second thing that might happen, and this is what we're very concerned about, is that sellers will be less inclined to offer compensation, which I don't think is necessarily in their best interest. In a few cases, it might be. That means that buyers are going to have to come up with more cash to be able to get into home ownership. And that's just generally not good. It's really bad for moderate and low income buyers who are trying to get into home ownership so they can start building long-term wealth. And we're just potentially making that barrier to entry even more. And the last thing's kind of internal. But it does bother me a little bit, right? We put all of these rules in place to make sure there was transparency within the industry, to make sure there was fair practices within the industry. And now we're taking that transparency away, which will allow some people to either mistakenly or nefariously do, you know, change their percentages around based on who they're talking to. And I think that is got a lot of risk involved with it. And I know that our policy will be essentially that if your seller is offering compensation, you share it with one, you share it with everyone, because the last thing we want to do is put ourselves in a position where we've offered somebody 3%, somebody 2%, somebody 1%, and the person who didn't get the highest amount is in a protected class, or even if we felt like we had a good reason to do it, we're just setting ourselves up for fair housing violations, for all kinds of stuff. And that's not the way we operate. But we're concerned that particularly, you know, people who just don't really understand it, or people who are being a little bit underhanded, will do some of these things because they can get away with it because it won't be so transparent. So these are the reasons why we're concerned about it. But the reality is that great realtors, and there's a lot of them, and obviously we think we fit that bill as well at Dream Properties Real Estate, they're going to be able to walk you through it. But we really wanted to do this podcast so you didn't buy into the headlines about what's likely going to change. Man.
Yeah, be careful if you're reading anything on social media, listening to the news, Facebook, TikTok, all of the things. Talk to your local realtor. If you're not in our area and you don't want to call us, or, you know, talk to your local realtor, because the boots on the ground are really where this is going to be at, and keeping up with the information and making sure that you're, you know, educating yourself as much as possible as a buyer yourself. Or if you're an agent out there, they are going to offer lots of courses on buyer's representation, and it is going to be more important than ever to jump on that. NAR has offered ABR, accredited buyer representation,
the class for free,
no charge,
through the end
of the
year.
This is for free, so they are doing their due diligence to make sure we all get brushed up to the best of our abilities. And really, I came out with a video when this first hit, and what I said was, nothing is really changing in our brokerage because we've always practiced these policies. Right. So these have been internal things that we've done. Eric did say maybe, hey, we got to do a little more math because things may be a little more fluid. We might not be able to get the data as easily because it's always been posted on the MLS. So there's probably going to be some extra steps that we take before we show you a property. You know, getting that buyer's representation out. We've always done that. We love to have those conversations. And the one thing that I do appreciate that this is doing is it is creating more conversations. And I am a firm believer from everything bad that happens, whether that's COVID, whether that's the settlement we feel is bad, whether it's a lawsuit, right? Those are all challenging things, but good things are going to come from that. And I know that's going to happen. And again, just really appreciate the opportunity that we've had with a lot of our listeners. I was in Jefferson City yesterday. I had a lot of conversations with our legislators on this. So it's really giving us a case to show what we do, because I think there's been a misconception out there that real estate's just an easy buck, Eric.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Lord knows I'm dragging in the millions in my 5 years in real estate.
I've been doing this several decades, but let me tell you, there's been hard-earned pennies, and everybody knows I'm an investor too. I have put a lot of risk and a lot of dollars and a lot of sweat and a lot of equity and shoveling poop, not just my horse's poop, but I've literally cleaned out houses in my investment portfolio that I questioned who pooped in the house. Was it the people or was it the animals? I mean, I've rolled that carpet up with my hands and thrown it in the trailer and hauled it to the dump. So nothing, it's not just a snap, crackle, pop, and oh, the money appeared. It's like literally getting my hands in shit. So
it is not, it's being a realtor is not a golden ticket. Just like any other industry, working hard pays off.
Consistency. And all the things.
And I think, you know, for me anyway, money isn't the driver, right? It's really helping people with this massive investment. And you're right. If this means that realtors are having more detailed conversations with their clients, then a lot of good will come out of this. We just wanted to let you know what's going on so far. Remember, this is a very specific thing right here on April 1st of 2024. Things can change. We'll keep you posted. Don't buy into all the headlines. And please, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us if there's something specific that you heard during this podcast or thought of and you're like, does it affect this? Does it affect that? You know, should I wait until August to find out what goes on, et cetera, et cetera? Ask all of those questions. They're great questions. We'll be happy to talk you through what our opinions are.
All right.
Anything else to close this out?
No, just be the change you wish to see, friends. It's like my favorite quote. So there you go. Shine all right. your light.
Hopefully you found this educational and informative, because that's really our goal with these podcasts. Until next time.
You have been listening to Get Real KC with Eric Jurgensen and Jen Justice. For more information or to contact our hosts, visit us at dreamhomesbyjen.com. where you can find more episodes exploring real estate as it matters to you.